This is a Dragon Blazer production, and I am the Little Boogeyman.
Coming down the aisle, it's the podcast tag team champions of the world, the Rage and Blaze Show.
Welcome to another exciting edition of the Rage and Blaze Show. I'm Rage.
And I'm Blaze.
And today we are going to be watching the last pay-per-view in 1989 of the 80s. We are moving into the 90s after this show. We are going to watch Survivor Series from November 23rd, 1989. And I am excited to move on from the 80s, move into the 90s. I know we'll be creeping into the Attitude Era. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, but I think we need to have just a moment of silence for the end of the 80s.
Okay.
All right, 90s.
Almost. Here we go. So now it's time to definitely get into the nitty gritty. Now, before we get into this Survivor Series show, I'd like to point something out that I haven't pointed out yet. We at the Rage and Blaze Show, yes, we love our wrestling. But want to know what else we love?
A lot of things. What specifically are you going with?
Video games.
We do.
That are wrestling.
That's
wrestling,
right.
Video games. So, here's where we're going to go with this. Okay, so the first technical WWF game was a game called Micro League Wrestling, and it came out in 1987. But it was a Micro League game that featured WWF wrestlers. So it wasn't a true, full-on WWF game. That game was for Commodore 64, and even though it's listed as the first WWF game, I'm going to claim that it's not the first of fit. That's like making a football game for the Nintendo Entertainment System and having Joe Montana in it, but not the NFL. It's a football game that features pro football. Get where I'm going with this
analogy?
Yeah,
fair enough.
And this has happened throughout history with football games, with wrestling games even. Later on, you had the Legends of Wrestling series that was not a WWF game, but they got certain wrestlers that were no longer affiliated with the WWF to join. So you had Hogan, Sting, Andre. You had certain wrestlers on that game, but it was not an official WWF game. So in my opinion, Micro League Wrestling was a game that there were several different other, like, Micro League Football, Micro League Pro. I would assume, nobody, like, quote me on this. They had sports titles. So
fair enough.
Micro League series, kind of like how Sega had the 2K series originally. There was the 2K basketball, 2K football.
Mm-hmm.
They had all the 2K series, and they had all the different sports. That's what Micro League did. They had different sports. And this Micro League Wrestling game just featured Hulk Hogan. And it had, I believe, a couple more wrestlers to its roster.
I'd be willing to bet Vince at the time was not super thinking video games were going to take off at the time or something.
So fast forward to 1989, which we are about to watch the final pay-per-view of the 80s in 1989. So I thought this was an appropriate episode to bring this up.
All right.
In 1989, the WWF signed a contract with Acclaim Video Games.
I remember Acclaim.
This contract lasted for about 10 years, okay? And they made several WWF games from 1989 to, I'd say, about 1999 until they lost the licensing to THQ in 2000. Okay?
All right.
And that's when the games, in my opinion, got super good.
Yeah, THQ did all.
We'll get to those video games when we get to those years. That's my idea. But we love our love for video games, so we would like to point out the video game history of wrestling. So the first game Acclaim released was WWF WrestleMania, which was also made by Rare.
Ooh.
We all know Rare. Rare originally was a part of Acclaim, and then they broke off, made their own, you know, gaming and everything, and Nintendo bought them out and had them work for them. But at the time, Rare worked for Acclaim. And it was called WWF WrestleMania. You could wrestle with six wrestlers. Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, Macho Man Randy Savage, The Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase, and Bam Bam Bigelow. Every character had pretty much your normal move sets: punch, kicks, headbutts, running attack. You could get on the turnbuckle and jump, although Andre the Giant and Bam Bam Bigelow was not allowed to do that.
Well,
you could do body slams, although Bam Bam Bigelow and Honky Tonk Man could not do that. Why, I don't know. But anyhow, it was a very basic, if anybody's played on the Nintendo Entertainment System, this was an 8-bit wrestling game. It's got some nostalgia. If you want to see gameplay footage, go to YouTube. There's plenty of gameplay footage of this game. It's got plenty of nostalgia, but it's not a great game. Unfortunately, with a lot of sports titles, they don't age well.
Yeah.
I will tell you, there is tons of 8-bit games. I am a classic gamer myself. I love the old stuff. Your Super Mario Brothers, Sonic the Hedgehog. I love the old stuff, okay? I really enjoy still playing some platformers and old school 8-bit games and even 16-bit games on the Super Nintendo. But when it comes to sports titles, they do not age well. Very few sports titles will I go back to.
There's a few 64 wrestling games I would go back to, though.
Well, that was a little different. You got the 3D models and things. The THQ wrestling games was amazing. The WCW games, the WWF games that THQ made was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, WCW I agree versus NWO.
Yeah.
I believe
WWF WrestleMania 2000.
Yeah, that one was great.
WWF No Mercy.
Yeah.
These games were classics. These games were WCW versus NWO. These games were incredible. But the old 8-bit games, a little bit to leave desired. They couldn't really do a lot with those games. Really, the only sports title I can think that I'd like to go back to on a Nintendo system,
I'm going to guess Tecmo Bowl.
Oh, yeah. Super Tecmo Bowl and Punch-Out.
Well, Punch-Out.
Which is
Punch-Out's
a little different.
Punch-Out is more of a...
It's still sport.
It is, but I look at that as more of a puzzle game, to be honest with you.
It's not a puzzle game.
It's essentially a puzzle boxing game where, you know, each character had a little bit of a, you know, weakness that you had to find.
It's not a puzzle game.
I didn't say it was a puzzle game. I said, it's like a puzzle game.
Not a puzzle game.
Oh, whatever.
So anyhow, Punch-Out is a boxing game.
No, there was one
wrestling
game.
There's just a strategy to it.
There was one wrestling game I remember enjoying as a kid, and I think I would be willing to go back to it. I believe it was called Pro Star Wrestling. You remember that? That had Starman.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'd have to do some research. Unfortunately, I did my research on the WWF games. But yes, I know what game you're talking about.
I remember that being pretty fun.
It's I believe it is on the Nintendo Virtual Console on the Nintendo Switch. So we would have to go check it out. I believe that game you were referring to is on there.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately, that's the problem with the Nintendo Switch Virtual Console, is a lot of licensing. Like, you've got Tecmo Bowl on there, but you don't have Super Tecmo Bowl because it's got the NFL licensing.
How nice.
So there's no, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There's no WWF. There's a lot of the licensing issues with that virtual
console. How cool would it be if we could find all these wrestling games that you're going to talk about and we could try them before we talk about them?
Well, I watched a YouTube video to remind me, and I do remember playing the game.
Oh, okay. So
unfortunately, I do not have access to to play it currently. I don't know how I would be able to get a hold of playing it, but that would be a blast to be able to break out these old wrestling games before we do this.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, we could do a whole different podcast on reviewing old wrestling games. But yeah. Unfortunately, they're not as accessible as these pay-per-views that we are watching.
Yeah. Too bad WWE Network doesn't include video games on it.
There you go, WWE. Hey, if you're Vince, listening,
Vince,
want to make some more money?
What you thinking?
Talk to Microsoft. They've been trying to add to that Game Pass. They just bought Bethesda. They just added EA Access to or EA Play. They added that to Game Pass. Why don't you hook them up with all the WWF games?
Yeah, problem with that is
it'd be awesome.
A lot of those are Nintendo games.
Well, a lot of them are Acclaim. Then there's THQ. So you've got your issues with the licensing.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm looking at my producer, and she's saying it's time to move on. And so we are going to definitely start getting into the action. Let's get started with Survivor Series 1989.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Okay, so Survivor Series starts off with several quick little promos, a little bit longer for Hulk Hogan, but everybody else had kind of a quick snippet of why they are thankful. And I mean, it ranges for different reasons, but they're all essentially wrestling related. So,
Mr. Perfect is thankful for being perfect, and you know, he's right.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan is thankful for living in the good old US of A.
Yeah, really pandering to the crowd.
Million Dollar Man is thankful for being rich.
And you're not.
Yes. And you know, the most sentimental one, it seemed like, was Bobby Heenan saying, I'm thankful for the Heenan family, but then you realize he's talking about a stable of wrestlers.
Right.
not his actual at-home Heenan family.
Yeah.
So that's what we get to start off Survivor Series. And then we get a voiceover from Vince McMahon and almost looked like, we were talking video games already in this show, like a video game player select screen.
Yeah, it really did. It looked exactly like a video game player, sir.
Yeah.
First thing I mentioned.
So they announced what all the matches were going to be, who the team captains were, and all the people in the match. And this is the first Survivor Series. This is our third Survivor Series we've done. This is the first Survivor Series that has moved to the classic, what we're traditionally used to, the 4-on-4 Survivor Series matches. Every match in here is Survivor Series 4-on-4.
Yeah.
And then we also, this is the first Survivor Series, that they give the teams names.
Yes, I love this.
So you have like the Hulkamaniacs as one. And I believe the first match we're about to have, I believe they were called the Dream Team.
Because it's the Enforcers versus the Dream Team.
Okay, the Enforcers versus the Dream Team because of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, and he is the team captain. Big Boss Man being the team captain is the Enforcers. So it's just kind of interesting that this is the first Survivor Series to kind of do those things. Because usually we've kind of had 5-on-5, 10-on-10 with the tag teams and all that. And this is more what we are used to with our traditional Survivor Series.
Yeah.
So the first match we get is the Dream Team versus the Enforcers. And it is the Dream Team consists of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, Brutus the Barber Beefcake,
snip, snip.
The Red Rooster, Cuck Caw,
boo, boo.
Tito Santana, and their opponents, the Enforcers, led by the Big Boss Man, Bad News Brown, Rick Martel, or the model Rick Martel. He is now referred to as the model, and the Honky Tonk Man. And they have Jimmy Hart and Slick in their corner. Now, this was a okay match. This match, in my opinion, wasn't a lot that overly excited me with this match. There wasn't any big spots, big moves. Most of the eliminations was like a roundup or a reversal pin. I don't even know if we saw one person use their finisher in this match. Not one.
No, we didn't even get the very weak elbow from the American Dream.
Yeah, so I really just thought this match did not do a lot to set the tone for the show. Although it's the actions after the match that I thought was more interesting, and we'll get to that. But why don't we go through the list of eliminations before we get to that?
Well, the first elimination was Tito Santana. Rick Martel gets a roll-up, and there's quite a couple roll-ups here.
Like I said, this match was full of roll-ups.
He also is pulling the tights. So Rick Martel is really embracing that heel role now. The model, Rick Martel. Bad News Brown walks out and gets counted out again. That is two Survivor Series in a row.
Two in a row. Bad News Brown has just said, I'm not.
He's just not this. About this Survivor Series life.
And even when he got tagged, he didn't want to come into the ring.
No. No, he did not. Against the Red Rooster. I mean, how pathetic do you have to be to not want to get in the ring with the Red Rooster? Are you scared of the Red Rooster?
I'm not scared of the Red Rooster.
I would go in there right now with a heart condition against the Red Rooster. Fuck the Red Rooster.
You know, the thing about the Red Rooster is he was so weak, Big Boss Man even choked him out. He was choking that chicken.
A rooster.
They're not the same.
It's a rooster, not a chicken. Damn it.
I could have swore I saw that happen in the
There's match. A difference.
Okay, so.
I'm sure.
So let's move on.
Someone who knows about this, like farms and stuff, know that it's definitely the difference somehow.
One's an alarm clock, right?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So next is the Honky Tonk Man getting taken out by a flying elbow by Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Shortly after that, the model tries to pin Brutus the Barber Beefcake, and Brutus reverses the pin and gets the 1-2-3. Then the Boss Man takes out the Red Rooster with a sidewalk slam, which this is way too long for the Red Rooster to be in the match.
I will say this was the most technical, devastating move of the whole match, though. This match was just littered with weak wrestling moves. Does that make sense? Like, it just, there was no excitement in this match, to my opinion.
Yes, we really needed a devastating move to take out the Red fucking Rooster. But, you know, whatever. I thought the most devastating move was Bad News Brown walking out on this team.
Okay, well. I actually don't think I can argue that.
And then Dusty ends the match by doing a crossbody on the Big Boss Man. This was kind of fun. This is a large man doing a crossbody on another large man, and he just slams down, gets the 1-2-3, and that is the end of this Survivor Series match.
When a large man does a crossbody on another large man, does one large man become a skinny man at the end of the move?
Well, no.
Okay, just asking. Okay, so the survivors in the first Survivor Series match was Dusty Rhodes and Brutus the Barber Beefcake. But what happens afterwards is starting to feel more modern wrestling. I really kind of got those vibes at the end of this match because Big Boss Man did not take his elimination very well, and he went and got his nightstick, and he attacked both men.
Well, they stole a win from Boss Man, and that is illegal. Apparently, it's absolutely illegal. Big Boss Man was just doing his job as an enforcer of the law.
Well, he definitely brought out the handcuffs and shown he was an enforcer of the law.
Sometimes you've got to do a little bit of police brutality, you know what I'm saying?
So he handcuffed, I believe it was Dusty Rhodes, to the ropes. And, he does this little attack with the nightstick. And then afterwards we get a little promo from Slick and Big Boss Man basically saying this isn't over with him and Dusty Rhodes.
That is correct. And I want to point out, okay, I have a little bit of issue about the past, okay? Slick makes absolute no sense as the Big Boss Man's manager. Like, I prefer your manager to kind of compliment, you know, to accent the wrestler. But Slick
Slick is like this weird, he seems like a pimp and he's managing a officer of the law. Tell me how that makes
sense. So you're saying Big Boss Man should be arresting the pimp?
I mean, isn't that illegal?
I believe so. In 49 states, I think it is.
I think so as well.
Not 50 states.
It's something that happened a lot in the 80s. Because they had a bunch of managers and they just managed
people. They didn't have a bunch of managers. That's the problem. They had a handful of managers and they managed all the wrestlers.
Yeah,
they managed all the heels and they said, you four guys are going to take care of the locker room.
Technically, I think Jimmy Hart managing the Hart Foundation was the only one that actually made sense for Jimmy Hart's character. But, I like Paul Bearer, perfect manager for The Undertaker, because, he was a pallbearer. The Undertaker was an Undertaker. It fit. Like, I want your manager to compliment your wrestling look.
Well, and style. Eventually, I believe we do get to that. Yeah,
that
point.
Comes
but it,
around.
But in the 80s, it seemed to kind of just be.
You were a manager, you had your own character, and it did not matter if it made sense that you were managing that person. And I just wanted to point it out as someone watching it right now that I hate that.
Okay, well, let's see what the rest of the show has to bring. Okay, so before the start of the next match, we get a promo by the team known as the 4x4s, which is Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Bret the Hitman Hart, Rugged Ronnie Garvin, and the Mighty Hercules. They give their little speech. They're all holding 4x4s, pointing them like they're shotguns, the so on and so forth. But what I really liked about this promo is that we got to hear Bret Hart talk on the mic, which we haven't really got a lot of that in our show so far.
No, he seems to be in every show, but he hasn't really done a lot of promos. They've just been kind of there.
Well, he's been in some great wrestling matches, but
Not
big talker so far.
Wrestling-wise, he's been doing he's been almost great every time.
So another thing we'd like to point out is that he is a member of the 4x4 Survivor Series team, and Jim the Anvil Neidhart is a part of a different team later on. So I don't know. We'd have to do our research. Did they split up, or did they just put them on two different Survivor Series teams? Is Bret Hart already a singles wrestler at this point?
Boomer, you wanna help us out with this one there?
So I'd have to do some research and find out what's going on with Bret Hart, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, see if they're still a tag team in November of 1989. Just kind of curious about that. So they come out to the ring, and then you've got the King's Court, who is their opponent, which is the Macho King, Randy Savage now, the Canadian Earthquake, Dino Bravo, and Greg the Hammer Valentine, and they have Jimmy Hart and Queen Sherry in their corner, which this is now two matches, two Jimmy Hart appearances.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll see three more.
I completely agree with that. So I thought this was a way better match than the first match. We got a heavy, heavy dose of Bret the Hitman Hart in the ring, which always elevates every match. So you also had Macho King, Randy Savage in there, who is an amazing wrestler as well. So this was head over heels better than the first Survivor Series match, in my opinion. A lot of fun spots, a lot of good spots, and we'll get to it, but unfortunately a really kind of lame ending.
Very lame ending. First person taken out, and this is ridiculous. They took him out so quick, we barely even noticed it. The Canadian Earthquake took out, Hercules. This is a demigod, and I don't understand.
This is the nasty pen. This is the one where he sat on his face.
Oh, that was a pen?
That was a pen.
Oh, I didn't realize it took him out there. Yeah, he did sat on his face. He had the nuts right up in right there.
It was nasty.
That was a large man. Next, Hacksaw Jim Duggan takes out Greg the Hammer Valentine with a clothesline. Just a lot of lame
And
yeah, kind of some weak stuff going on so far.
Then we had Dino Bravo taking out rugged Ronnie Garvin, who I still did not realize is not a jobber, with a sidewalk slam. And then we actually get a finisher, the flying elbow drop with Macho Man Randy Savage taking out Bret the Hitman Hart, which this is the only way you should be able to take out Bret the Hitman Hart, with a legendary finisher move.
And that was a good back and forth between those two for a while in the ring. They really gave them some time to shine in the ring, and it was really fun to watch.
Yeah, two great superstars up against each other.
Not just great. These were legends.
Yeah. Then we have the lamest ending, because it just – Hacksaw Jim Duggan gets counted out, and that's how the 4x4s lose this match. And it wasn't like somebody attacked or they were beating Hacksaw down. He just – I believe this is where Queen Sherry was trying to talk to the ref and accidentally pulled down the rope.
Uh-huh.
And Hacksaw is running towards it, and he just trips over the rope.
Well, and not only did this happen and got him out of the ring, but then Macho King distracted the referee, and the Canadian Earthquake ended up finishing him off at the in the outside the ring to make sure he didn't come back from the 10 count.
Yeah, he did like one move on him, and it wasn't even that devastating of a move, and he just couldn't get in there quick enough. It was really lackluster and way to end this match. I was quite disappointed with this ending.
Yeah, it was kind of a lame ending, but like I said, it was a good match. It was a good match up until the end. So
not arguing, it was just a decent match.
So well, then Hacksaw Jim Duggan, he decides to he's not happy about this, grabs his 2x4 or 4x4, and he runs everybody out of the ring.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so let's see what more we got in store. Okay, so before the start of the next match, we get a Mean Gene Okerlund standing outside the locker room or the dressing room of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, letting them know that he will keep us updated on his condition after that heinous attack by the Big Boss Man. So this is really starting to feel like modern wrestling. I mean, checking out, you know, being outside the locker room, talking about people's health. It's just this show just feels like we just took a leap in a different direction than all the other shows we've done before.
Yeah.
Usually you get a little promo cut, then you get the match. But a little bit more is going on in this show.
We haven't really been getting promo cuts, though, telling any stories, though.
Not necessarily, but we're getting a little bit of extra stuff at the end of the matches, and there's just a little bit more going on that feels more like modern WWE.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next thing we get is a poem read by the Genius, and that was a big waste of time, so we'll move on.
Yeah.
So now we move on to the next match, which is the Million Dollar Dream, the Million Dollar Team, which is the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, the Warlord, the Barbarian, and Zeus, with Virgil and Mr. Fuji in their corner, versus the Hulkamaniacs, who all individually get, well, sort of individually, Demolition's a tag team. They all get entrances with entrance musics, while the Million Dollar Team was already in the ring at
and
the time.
And still no Million Dollar Music.
Yes.
This is travesty.
Still no music for the Million Dollar Man. So then that team consists of course, Hulk Hogan, Jake the Snake Roberts, and then Axe and Smash of Demolition. And this was, once again, I believe, another solid match with some very interesting elimination decisions.
This match was bullshit.
So, this match, in my opinion, was better than the first, kind of better than the second. I don't know. It was kind of on the edge because that second match, I think, might have been better, but the ending really kind of held it back.
this match, the referee just kept on protecting Hogan's dumbass.
So, and what he's referring to is the way that the heels, almost all the heels, got eliminated. So why don't we go through the eliminations?
Well, first bullshit elimination is Zeus being disqualified for, you know, just choking Hogan and attacking him. It's fine.
I think he got disqualified for pushing Earl Hebner across the ring.
Well, I mean, what do you want him to do? Earl Hebner literally grabbed him by the head and tossed him.
Well, he didn't toss him anywhere. He didn't move. He didn't budge.
Attempted to toss him.
Okay, next elimination.
Axe gets tripped up and pinned by the Warlord. Then Smash is taken out by a flying clothesline from the Barbarian. Then both Powers of Pain are DQ'd for doing something literally every single tag team does in a tag team match.
Yeah, that was
bullshit number two.
That was an awkward one, because even if somebody was going to get disqualified for this, you would have thought it was the non-legal man would get disqualified. But instead, he eliminated in one fell swoop both men for basically doing a tag team move. And apparently they have exceeded the five count of, you know, when you make a tag, you can come in and do a little move and there's a five count. Apparently they exceeded that five count, did a double spike pile driver, and then got disqualified for it. So it was a very awkward decision on the part of, you know, whoever booked this match. For the way these eliminations happen.
Rage, you say awkward, I say biased. Protecting Hawk frickin' Hogan.
Okay, so the next one was
Jake the Snake Roberts.
Now this one was a little different. Virgil put his nose in business he shouldn't have put his nose in, and he ends up getting a DDT for his troubles. Well, after Jake goes down for the DDT, Million Dollar Man takes this as an opportunity to do one of his dropping fists that he does. And then he puts his legs up on the rope and holds him down for a pin, and the referee doesn't see it.
Well, he has to do some things because the referee is obviously biased towards Hulk Hogan. You know, he is just trying to level the playing field, Rage.
Okay. So then we finally get the final survivor and the winner of this match for the Hulkamaniacs. Hulk Hogan does what Hulk Hogan does best. He does not sell a move that Ted DiBiase puts on him. It's like a suplex that he did, and he literally just gets up and shakes his head like he is the Incredible Hulk.
Well, yeah.
That's the name.
They call it Hawking Up. Yeah, and then he does the lamest finisher of all time. The leg drop to defeat one of the greatest superstars of any era, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase.
So then we get about, I think it was about 6 hours and 20 minutes of pandering after the match.
Hulk Hogan is a piece of shit.
It's horrible. So yeah, we get the little, the four sections of the ring. He, I can't hear you, sticks his hand up against his ear, does the pose. And the surprising thing, more than anything, is this was not the main event. This was not the last match of the night. I think we still have at least two matches, maybe one or two matches left. We still have those matches left, and it was shocking to see that Hogan was not in the main event.
I'm sure Hogan's dumb yellow ass is going to manage to find his way into the main event somehow. And then he'll start posing again. And 30 minutes of this damn show is going to be him posing after two different matches.
And we will sit and watch it, and we will review it like we do every show.
I'm crying.
Okay, let's see what we got next. Okay, so after the 15 hours and 37 minutes of pandering from Hogan, we can now move on to this next promo, which is the Macho King post-match interview. And even though he wasn't on the King's Court team earlier, he is accompanied by Zeus during this interview, and he is talking and promoting a cage match that is going to be happening around Christmas time. Apparently, we looked this up, and apparently they were going to, I don't know if this was a pay-per-view or a television event.
It was like a pay-per-view. They were going to show the No Holds Barred movie, and then there was going to be a tag team steel cage match between Brutus the Barber Beefcake and Hulk Hogan versus Macho King Randy Savage and Zeus in a steel cage.
So they start promoting this pretty heavily during this post-interview, and then they take us to the locker room with Brutus the Barber Beefcake and Hogan responding to the comments of the Macho King and Zeus. And during this interview, Queen Sherry throws some powder into both of their eyes. Macho King and Zeus come and attack them in the backstage area.
And then a bunch of other people come in and join.
Yeah, so then it becomes like a bunch of people. So that just happened, and they are definitely promoting this No Holds Barred watch on pay-per-view with this cage match. So then the next thing we get is the Rude Brood being interviewed with Ravishing Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect, and the Rougeau brothers. They're talking about their upcoming Survivor Series match against Rowdy's Rowdies, which they respond, and that was mainly talking about food.
Yeah, they had some very disgusting looking bones that I did not see a bit of meat on it. And they were just chewing on those bones.
So that happened.
Yep.
So now moving on, this is the first Survivor Series match of the night that I believe every member got an entrance.
Yeah, I believe everyone did.
The heels were not standing in the ring at the beginning of the match or vice versa. Everybody got an entrance here.
Yeah, and also, can we talk about how weird the Rougeaus were? In that interview,
they were kind of awkward. They weren't very great on the mic, but it happens. So this match is Rowdy Rowdies with Rowdy Piper, the Superfly Jimmy Snuka, Bushwhackers Luke and Butch versus the Rude Brood, Ravishing Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect, Jacques Raymond Rougeau, both of the Raju brothers, which is Jacques and Raymond. And then in their corner, they have the Genius and Jimmy Hart. This was, I thought, an absolute great Survivor Series match. This match started off fast. This match was fun from the beginning. There was no real bad moments in this match at all. And it had a lot of great spots. So let's go through the elimination list. But I thought this match was fantastic.
Yeah. So the first elimination is Jimmy Superfly Snuka going off the top rope with a flying splash to take out Jacques Rougeau. This was a lot of fun. Rowdy Piper pins the mustached Rougeau, Raymond Rougeau. And as he's pinning him, Mr. Perfect tries to come in and stop the pin. And Piper, while still being in the pin, punches Mr. Perfect and gets the 1-2-3.
That was an interesting moment. I've never seen quite anything like that.
Yeah, it was fun. Then we had Mr. Perfect taking out Butch of the Bushwhackers he reversed a pin and into a pin. Then Luke is taken out by Ravishing Rick Rude with the Rude Awakening, which is a great finisher, especially in this day and age. At this time period, Ravishing Rick Rude's finisher is awesome.
Yeah, it's a reverse neck breaker. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Then we had a double count out for Rowdy Piper and Ravishing Rick Rude. They just just were attacking each other right down the aisleway, and
definitely selling this feud for maybe the next pay-per-view, maybe Royal Rumble, WrestleMania.
We're either going to see a Royal Rumble match between them, or what I like when they do is when you have a huge feud, you have them show face each other in the Rumble, and then set up the feud or the match for WrestleMania.
And that might be what we end up getting.
Yes. Then this match ends with Mr. Perfect applying the perfect flex on Jimmy Superfly Snuka, getting the 1-2-3.
So the winners here are the team of the Rude Brood. So then after the match, we get a Rude Brood post-match interview referring to how they had the perfect combination to win this match.
And they did.
Yeah. And then once again, as seems to be the theme of the night, Jimmy Superfly Snuka did not take well to the loss and attacked Mr. Perfect at the end. So this has kind of been a theme where there's been some extracurriculars after the match. So let's go on. I believe it is time for our main event. Okay, so before the main event of the night, we have a promo with the Ultimate Warrior and his team, which they went by
the Ultimate
the
Warriors.
Ultimate Warriors.
Yeah, really, really clever name there.
Pretty clever there. So they give themselves their little promo, and then we start getting the entrances, which in this match we only got entrances to the faces. I think the heels were already in the ring when they got there.
Yeah.
So it was the Heenan family, which is consisted of Bobby the Brain Heenan, Andre the Giant, Haku, and Arn Anderson versus the Ultimate Warriors, the Ultimate Warrior, Jim the Anvil Nighthawk, Shawn Michaels, and Marty Jannetty, which is, of course, the Rockers. Now, the interesting thing here is at the beginning of the show, they had advertised the matches, and Tully Blanchard was supposed to be in this match. It was supposed to be the Brainbusters with Haku and Andre the Giant. So not sure why the change. Tully Blanchard wasn't even out there, so it wasn't like they swapped places and he became a manager. So we don't know what happened with Tully Blanchard. But Bobby the Brain Heenan ended up taking Tully Blanchard's spot.
Yeah, very interesting, very weird. I don't know if it was they screwed up the intro and saying that Tully was the Brainbusters were there.
Yeah, because it didn't seem like they made a big deal about him taking that spot.
No,
so
it's weird.
Not 100% sure what happened there. But whatever happened, Tully Blanchard was not in this match. So this was a pretty good match. It was a decent match. I thought it had a lot of good spots, but I don't know. It had some great moments when Shawn was there. But then after that, there was a lot of kind of clunky moves that happened during this match.
Yeah, there was
some awkwardness.
Really great moves in this match too.
But then there were some great moves. So it was just kind of an up and down roller coaster type of a match. But let's go ahead and go through these eliminations here.
All right. Well, first elimination is Warrior comes running out and eliminates Andre by clotheslining him out of the ring, and he could not get up in time for the count out.
So he gets counted 1-2, to the 10 count, and Andre literally, that was his time in this match. He was done.
Yeah, he was out. Next we had Haku eliminating Jim the Anvil Nightheart with his super kick or whatever his kick finisher is. Then we had Bobby the Brain Heenan taking out Marty Jannetty by grabbing his junk while pinning him. You should be careful because the last guy that tried that, Marty made disappear.
Fair enough.
The Ultimate Warrior tossed Sean into Haku with a crossbody and eliminated Haku. Warrior was just tossing everyone around, and he was getting very frustrated because they weren't sharing their tags between the Rockers. Rockers kept tagging each other in, and Warrior's just getting frustrated because he wanted tagged in. Then Arn Anderson eliminates Shawn Michaels. Normally I would complain with Shawn Michaels being eliminated with a spine buster, but holy shit. Shawn sold it. Arn Anderson sold it. I mean, it looked devastating.
It was a really good spine buster.
Yeah. Then the Ultimate Warrior takes out Arn Anderson with the big splash. And then, of course, he plays around with Heenan, who's left in the ring against him, and finishes him off with a big splash. And the Ultimate Warriors win this match. The team of Ultimate Warrior adding on an S.
Okay. So I did some research real quick while you were going through there. Number one, Haku's finisher is called the thrust kick.
The thrust kick.
But it's essentially an awkward positioned super kick. He just doesn't get his leg up nearly as high.
Yeah, he doesn't hit the chin as so much as he hits the chest.
Okay, so and even though they did not explain a single thing to us, I found out why Tully Blanchard is not in the match.
Why is Tully Blanchard not in the match?
Apparently, the day of the pay-per-view, Tully Blanchard failed a drug test. When he failed that drug test, he was fired from the WWF on that day.
And they forgot to change it from the promos.
Apparently, the graphics was already in place, and they actually did not give us an explanation, but Bobby the Brain Heenan ended up going in his spot.
What are they going to say? Tully Blanchard is not able to be here because he failed a drug test.
So
WWE fans.
So apparently, we have seen the last of the Brain Busters in the WWF for our podcast purposes because he obviously probably goes back to WCW. And I don't know how much longer we get to see Arn Anderson now that the Brain Busters are no longer there. Because I've really enjoyed seeing Arn Anderson.
Arn has been great.
He's been absolutely great. So apparently that is the backstory on why we have Bobby the Brain Heenan joining the match. Very interesting that they didn't do anything to kind of give us any kind of backstory on what happened. They just kind of put Bobby the Brain in there. And you've got all these wrestlers in the locker room. It's just amazing they put Bobby the Brain in there.
Yeah.
You think you could have found another wrestler to just throw in there?
Well, it was his group. So, I mean, and he has wrestled before. So I guess it makes sense. Just replace him to be a wrestler instead of the manager.
Okay, so let's go ahead. That is the end of Survivor Series 1989. Let's go ahead and go to our rankings.
Favorite match of the night.
Okay, so I'll start this off. Favorite match of the night for me is an easy one. It was the Rude Brood versus the Rowdies. I thought this match was fantastic from beginning to end. Had some great spots in it, great moments. I just thought this was an absolutely excellent match.
Well, you know, we normally like some parody here, but when you're right, you're right. It was the best match of the night. There was no debating it. Rick Rude is fantastic. Roddy Piper is fantastic. It was just a fantastic match. It was the best match of the night.
Okay.
Hands down.
Definitely.
Worst match of the night.
Okay, so worst match of the night. I kind of had a toss-up. I was going to go with the Dream Team versus the Enforcers. That was my initial knee-jerk reaction. But I'm going to change it up because I really think the Hulkamaniacs versus the Million Dollar Team
was the worst match of the night. And I don't think any match was overly horrible or overly great. I mean, I thought the one with Roddy Piper, I thought that was actually kind of great. But there wasn't a match that, like, I despised. Does that make sense? So I kind of based this decision off of the way three of the heels got eliminated. The disqualifications to me was just overbearing for that match and made it very awkward. And for me, that was the worst match of the night just because the lack of pins, submissions, and any real eliminations. Just kind of weird.
I don't disagree with you. That was not great. I'm going to go with the match that had the most disappointing ending, and that was the 4x4s versus King's Court. And it wasn't a bad match. And like you said, there's not really a bad match on this show, but that ending soured me so much. So I'm going to go with that one.
Okay, I understand that, but I'd like to go back to my worst match because I have a theory.
Oh?
Okay, so you had the Hulkamaniacs versus the Million Dollar Team. Three out of the four members of the Million Dollar Team got eliminated by disqualification, which means that nobody on the Hulkamaniacs was able to get put over and pin or submit anybody, with the exception of Hogan at the very end.
Yeah.
Getting the pinfall at the very end and being the hero and the music playing. It almost felt like Hogan doesn't want to put any of his teammates over during this match. So we're going to disqualify all of them, and that way Hogan gets the sole pin of the match.
Disqualified while Hogan is in the ring, too. You know, you have a point, and I believe this is part of the argument I have. But I will say that we had a first tonight. We had a first on the Rage and Blaze show. Out of all the pay-per-views we've watched so far, this is the first pay-per-view where Hogan didn't shove his face all over the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, even WrestleMania 4, Macho Man wins the title, Hogan comes out and celebrates with him.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's like, even
every time,
even if he's not a part of the main event, he seems to weasel his way into the final seconds of the show. And in this one, it finally didn't happen.
No Hogan whatsoever.
The Ultimate Warrior got his glory at the end, and yeah, his music played and he ran out. But it made the show quickly end. It was kind of nice.
Yeah, and unlike Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior didn't pander to the crowd for 20 minutes after he won. He just ran right outside, knocked over Bobby the Brain Heenan for a little extra measure, and then just left.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go ahead and see how these shows stack up.
Survivor Series rankings.
Okay, so as for my rankings, I really just don't think I was blown away by this one, but I wasn't disappointed either. I think I'm going to go back to Survivor Series 2 being the best. Then I'm putting Survivor Series 3 and then Survivor Series 1 just because there was a lot going on in Survivor Series 2 that I thought was pretty exciting. The premiere of Owen Hart, I believe we got the premiere of Mr. Perfect. There was just a lot of great stuff going on at Survivor Series 2.
See, I'm actually going to go a little different. My last is definitely Survivor Series 1. But I'm going to put Survivor Series 3 is the best, and Survivor Series 2 in the middle. And it's mostly because, if I remember right, with Survivor Series 2, I thought all the matches were decent. And in this one, I had a match that I actually really, really enjoyed. Where in Survivor Series 2, I didn't have one of those really big standout matches, but they were all decent matches. Where this one, I had some disappointments, but I also had a standout match. So I'm going to give it to Survivor Series 3.
Okay, well, fair enough. It looks like we're a little different here in our Survivor Series rankings, which is okay. But you can tell us what you think on our pluggables. Let's plug the pluggables. So you can continue the conversation at the Rage and Blaze Show on Instagram, the Rage and Blaze Show Facebook page, also at Ricky Rayberg on Twitter.
Yeah, and you can follow me at Dragon Blazer Productions on the Facebooks, the Instagrams, the YouTubes. Yes, multiple dimensions again. And you can follow me on Twitter at Dragon Blazer Pro.
Okay, so that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Rage and Blaze Show, our 1989 Survivor Series. And it looks like we are leaving the 80s. We are moving into the 90s.
That's right. No more acid wash jeans. Here comes grunge.
Well, a little bit later into the 90s. I think we're still going to deal with a little bit of old school here for the beginning of the 90s. But definitely once Monday Night Raw kicks off in 93, it kind of changes things. And I'm looking really forward. Also in 1990, we have the premiere of The Undertaker.
Oh, yeah. We're getting close.
So this will be the last year of our coverage without any Undertaker on the show.
Yeah, I think it was a Survivor Series.
Survivor Series, yes. So our next Survivor Series show, we will get the premiere of The Undertaker, and I'm really excited for that.
We get to start counting the streak.
Yes. Oh, yes, we would get to do that. Starting with WrestleMania, we can count the streak. Good deal. So that has been it for the Rage and Blaze Show. I am Rage.
And I'm Blaze.
Good night from Rage's Pit.
And here is your winners and still podcast tag team champions of the world, the Rage and Blaze Show. Thank you for listening.